This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on March 22, 2012. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good morning. The open session for Thursday, March 22, 2012 will now come to order. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. Madam Vice Chair, do we have a motion?
We do, Madam Chair. I move that we approve the minutes for the meeting of March 1st, 2012, as set forth in agenda document number 12-18.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it 5-0. Thank you very much. The next matter on the agenda is draft advisory opinion 2012-05. Lantos?
Late submitted document.
Oh, sorry. Is there a motion for a late submitted document?
Yes, Madam Chair. Just to save us a little time, I'll do both of them at once.
Fantastic.
I move that we waive the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents so that we may consider agenda documents 12-17 and 12-19.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it 5-0. Now moving on to the advisory opinion, Ms. Wallstriker from the Office of General Counsel.
Thank you, Chair Hunter. Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
Agenda document 12-17 is a draft response to an advisory opinion request submitted by Janet Zeleny on behalf of the Tom Lantos for Congress Committee and by Eric Schnapper on behalf of the Lantos Foundation for Human Rights and Justice. The Tom Lantos for Congress Committee is the authorized committee of the late Congressman Tom Lantos. The Lantos Foundation is a nonprofit organization established by Congressman Lantos's friends, family, and supporters to continue his efforts to advance human rights. The request asks whether the Act and Commission regulations permit the committee to donate its remaining funds to the foundation, subject to certain restrictions. The draft concludes that the committee may donate its remaining funds to the foundation. Contributions to charitable organizations described in Section 170C of the Internal Revenue Code, such as the foundation, are specifically identified in the Act as a permissible use of campaign funds, and the committee's proposed donation to the foundation would not be a conversion to personal use. We did not receive any comments on the request or on the draft, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments on the draft? Is there a motion? Madam Vice Chair.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we approve the answer to the Lantos Foundation in draft advisory opinion 2012-05 as set forth in agenda document 12-17.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it 5-0. Thank you. The next matter on the agenda is draft advisory opinion 2012-06, rickperry.org. Ms. Hemsley from the Office of General Counsel. Thank you.
Chair Hunter. Commissioners, good morning to each of you. Agenda document 12-19 contains two draft responses to the advisory opinion requested by rickperry.org. Both drafts conclude that the presidential committee may convert into a non-connected committee and use leftover primary election funds to fund the activities of the non-connected committee. The drafts differ, however, as to whether the presidential committee may obtain redesignations of contributions designated and accepted for the general election for use by either the non-connected committee or by Governor Perry's state campaign committee. Draft A concludes that the presidential committee may not obtain redesignations of the general election funds to either the non-connected committee or to the governor's state campaign committee and would, in fact, require the presidential committee to refund the general election funds. Draft B, on the other hand, concludes that the presidential committee may obtain the redesignations for the non-connected committee or for Governor Perry's state campaign committee. We received no comments on either the requests or the drafts, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sanderson is here today in the audience. If anybody has any questions, I think he'd be willing to answer them. But we'll start here. Any questions or comments? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll start because I think for everybody else at the table, this is a question of first impression, but I've actually looked at this one before because a very similar request came in 2003 from then-Senator Bob Smith, from the Bob Smith for Congress and a charity that he wanted to set up. And the question is basically the same, is what can you do with these funds that were donated for the general election when the candidate never participated in the general election, never qualified for the general election, and therefore was never, I mean, you have to raise them in advance. You can't raise them at the last minute, but you're never actually entitled to use them because you're not a candidate in that election. And the commission has regulations on what can be done with them. At the in 2003, the commission decided on a unanimous vote that if a candidate properly receives and handles contributions designated for the general election, yet does not become a candidate in the general election, the disposition of these general election contributions is expressly limited by commission regulations. A candidate who fails to qualify for the general election must either refund all such contributions or obtain redesignations of those contributions in accordance with 11 CFR 110.1B5 and 110.2B5, or a combination of reattributions and redesignations of the contributions in accordance with, I won't read all the regulatory sites, but suffice it to say, the commission decided that that's the handling of those funds is expressly limited by those regulations. So if someone wants to do something that's not in those regulations, it's currently not permitted. And that was a unanimous decision. It was adopted by not only myself, but Commissioners McDonald and Thomas and Toner and Mason and your favorite ex-commissioner, Brad Smith. So that's what the commission decided then. I'm in the same place now. If there were four votes at the table today to adopt a different position, that's fine. I think we could certainly consider other alternatives in a rulemaking process, and I think the requester raises some interesting arguments, and I might be receptive to them in the rulemaking context. I just don't think we can do it here in an AO. So, as I said, I think, you know, four commissioners could change that precedent today. But if there aren't four votes to change that, I think, Mr. Sanderson, your facts are materially indistinguishable from the ones that were presented to the commission in 2003, and that's the answer that is still on the books. So that means I will be supporting Draft A.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Commissioner McGann?
Not sure I agree with the last bit on the significance of an AO. I seem to hear that because the AO is there, somehow that's the operative norm that would then require the Perry Committee to do it however that AO said to do it. It's not what the statute says AOs do. AOs are protections. If you come within an AO that's materially indistinguishable, you have the protection of the AO. I'm not sure the converse is true. My guess is that we may never know. But to me, the question is whether or not the contribution limits are being adhered to. The general rule is that if a candidate goes through a primary and either loses or drops out or for whatever reason doesn't make it to the general election money has to be returned to the contributors. It's a pretty basic reason why that is. It's not because the FEC did it through regulation. It's because the statute has contribution limits. And the idea is you can't take the general money and use it for the primary or use it for a different election unless the contributor sends it off to another election somehow. So the general rule is you need to make a refund. Here, this requester wants to take the general money and not put it in his own pocket. It's not like he's converting it to personal use, so that's not a concern. He doesn't want to spend it in the primary election, so you're not going to have a contribution limit problem. Instead, he wants to move it to either a state committee or he wants to convert his campaign to essentially a non-connected committee, a PAC of sorts, and he asks, can he keep the money? Well, the answer to that question is no, he can't just keep the money. But it seems to me that he ought to be able to ask the contributors for some sort of redesignation and shift it over. If the contributors are okay with it, then I think it ought to be fine. If the contributors say no, well, then the money has to go back. So no one is suggesting that he can just willy-nilly move money around without any sort of involvement of the contributor, because otherwise that would provide a way to probably end run contribution limits. Now, the reg does not specifically, in my view, contemplate this situation. It talks in terms of other authorized committees because, well, contribution limits for authorized committees are different than non-connected committees. Authorized are per election, non-connected are per year. So it's not the best fit. But because the reg doesn't address it, I'm not sure that necessarily ties our hands, so long as the statute's not being frustrated. So my thinking is that draft B, sure I got the right A and B, yes, draft B works as well because it doesn't run contrary to the statute. Given the time it takes to do a rulemaking, I'm not sure that that can happen between now and whenever this committee really wants to shift this money. And I think it really is a proper use of the AO process to come in and say, here's something that seems okay under the statute, but the reg doesn't really seem to contemplate it. You could say the reg answers it in the negative because the reg only gives permission to move the money certain ways. But once you're not a federal candidate, I have trouble talking about giving permission and not giving permission, particularly when draft B says you have to go back to the contributors and get them to agree to moving the money. It seems to me that if draft A were the way to go, the committee could then have to essentially make refunds to the contributors. They'd have to pay for all that, print it up, use the postage. They have to do that anyway because they're going to have to go back to the contributors. Then the contributors would have to take the check, the refund check, and either deposit it or do whatever they want to do with it, hopefully deposit it. Then they'd have to write another check and give it back to the PAC. Seems to me that that's a lot of work to reach the same solution that draft B reaches. So it's not really a bold step forward. To me, it's more of an answer that tries to make sense of the current law and adhere to the contribution limits in a way that's not nearly as cumbersome as draft A would have it, but yet achieve the same result. Draft B, I think we made clear you'd have to use any excess primary funds to pay. You couldn't use general money to pay because that would be improper. So seems to me the question is, do we make them give the money back and have the contributors cash the check and then write a new check, or do we let the contributors just via a simpler thing say, you can just keep my money and shift it to the other committee? I think we're within our power to say the latter is okay, and to say it's not makes it, I think, much more complicated than it really is. So I can support draft B for those reasons.
Any other comments? Commissioner Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess to start off, there's a great deal of overlap in terms of A and B, but it is the differences do revolve around this issue of what can be done with the general election funds that were solicited and received by Governor Perry when he was still a candidate. And I suppose some of the difference of opinion is based on whether or not we think the Smith AO really did deal with facts that were materially distinguishable from the ones that we have here. In that case, as the vice chair pointed out, that dealt with a proposal to transfer those general election funds to a 501c3. Here, we have a slightly different scenario involving the actual conversion of the authorized committee into a non-authorized committee. And I suppose where we're going to land on this depends on whether or not we think that's a material distinction. In my assessment, I think it is. And for that reason, I think that this is slightly different than what we had in the Smith AO. And for the, you know, I agree with what Commissioner McGann said. What we need to be first and foremost concerned about is, are the contribution limits. There's nothing in this that in any way circumvents those creates a situation where someone is able to double dip and compromise those limits in any way. I think that that the proposal or the answer in draft B is consistent with the statute and much less cumbersome for the committee involved. And like I said, I do think that this is a slightly different scenario than the one that presented itself in the 2003 Smith AO. And for that reason, I'm prepared to support draft B.
Thank you. Commissioner Walther?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For me, it's a close call because, frankly, I don't see a policy reason not to ultimately have the money go to an unauthorized committee. And I generally think as long as the person's donor knows exactly what the donor is doing with the money, they generally ought to have the authority to do whatever they want. So we're talking about basically adding a layer of bureaucracy to the circumstance where you ask for you get a refund and you say, and by the way, I suppose in that letter, you write them back and they say, now can we give the money to X? And they say yes or no. And I suppose there's probably some drop-off there because once the money's in the hand of the donor, they're not going to be quite as likely as if they never saw it again. So I suppose there's some loss involved there. But the law, the regs are so specific, and of course Smith is the same way. I just am reluctant to go much farther than where we've gone. I think if we want to do a regulation, if we could actually get regulations out quick enough, I think we ought to get going and actually consider a couple of these things that we see coming across the pike that we could make a quick fix on. But I'm going to stay with the draft A today, and then maybe we could have two reg committees where one does the weight and heavy lifting for the ones that really are tough, and then the ones that kind of do the lighter lifting for the ones that we can actually, you know, move out the door without a great deal of controversy.
That's a good idea. The fast track regs committee? Right. Okay, let's get to work on that. But we have two regs that we're working on, Steve, as you know, so hopefully we'll get those out before the end of the year. I, too, am going to...
This year,
2012. Well before the end of the year, I should say. I, too, can support draft B, really for the same reasons that my colleagues, Commissioner McGann and Commissioner Peterson, already eloquently explained. Any other questions or comments? A motion?
Okay. Actually, can I ask a
question?
Question
again.
I'd say to council, but council or really anyone who knows, what's the quickest way, if we really wanted to take debate on this and do a rulemaking, are there options to do some sort of interim rule or some sort of thing that's quicker than the full-blown as a stopgap? Because it seems like the temperature is pretty warm to let the committee do it, but for the current regs, and I've heard folks say they'd consider the arguments. So, since we're in an open meeting, why don't we just kind of figure this out and deliberate?
There is methodology available for expediting rulemaking up to a point. We're happy to consider that and quickly and get back to you with a more fully reasoned explanation. But there is some way to expedite rulemaking to a point. Maybe not as quickly as one would hope, but to a point.
I mean, it's not like we got to do an emergency rule to stop toxic torts and we're the EPA or something. I mean, but it seems to me that this is a practical solution to an issue that will probably come up again because, you know, recall when you ran for president, not long ago, you never raised general money because the assumption was you're going to take the taxpayer money. And then the Obama AO came through and said, well, you can actually raise general money before you even make that decision. So now you're going to have people from here on out raising general money. What are they going to do with it? And, you know, maybe the answer is they have to give it back no matter what. Maybe that's – maybe on the merits that ends up being the decision. I would think you'd be able to shift it over. And I think I've heard enough people say that that makes some sense. So it seems to me it's something we ought to look at. And it seems like the sort of thing that's low-lying fruit that we ought to be able to pull off the tree and actually do, notwithstanding larger issues on the fancy Philadelphia lawyer stuff. You could probably do the more – nuts and bolts stuff quicker. So I appreciate council willing to take a look if there's a way we can do something now for this committee, though, they only have so much time to do all this, which, yeah, that's a bummer maybe for them, but we can try.
Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to consider any and all rulemaking options. I think that we actually should be doing a lot more of reviewing. Darn, I've got the old book here. Reviewing all the regs that are in here on a regular basis for to make sure they're consistent with changes in with new ideas that people come up with changing technology, with changes in the way politics is practiced, not to mention changes in what the Supreme Court says. We should be doing a lot more of that. Want to make sure that whatever we would do, because I can't remember off the top of my head exactly how the, you know, interim final rulemaking process works, but I wouldn't want to do anything that did not allow for some public comment. Because one issue that's raised by this is whenever you've got a refund redesignation issue, the assumption is that, you know, the money is in some sense the candidates or the recipients' money to, you know, they get permission from the donors, but then they can kind of move it around to other places. But this is kind of this is different from the situation where somebody has excess campaign funds in an account, because in this case, this money really doesn't belong to the candidate. It does belong to the donors. So there is an argument that it really ought to be refunded. But, you know, I hear the arguments that, you know, well, if you get the permission, you can do it anyway. So why are we setting up additional obstacles? Happy to consider that. I think, you know, I might end up agreeing with that, but I would only be willing to do it after an appropriate public comment period. It doesn't have to be 3 months, but, you know, enough time for people to actually weigh in. Want motions?
Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With respect to advisory opinion request 2012-06, I move that we approve draft A with appropriate technical and conforming amendments.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion fails 2-3. Any other motions? Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move approval of draft B as set forth in agenda document number 12-19.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
The motion fails 3-2. Thank you very much.
I got one.
Yep.
Madam Chair, I move that the Commission direct OGC to prepare a draft in response to the request that incorporates the background section and the response to question 1 in Agenda Document 12-19 Draft B, with the introduction revised accordingly and any necessary technical and conforming edits. Indicates that the Commission could not agree on a response by the required 4 affirmative votes with respect to questions 2 and 3, and circulate that draft for approval on tally, on a short tally, I think.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. 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 Opposed? The ayes. I'm sorry.
Can I just ask? Just to make clear that as part of the motion, the timing issue was considered part of the consensus draft that we're going to, because there was the issue of how many days they have post the issuance of this advisory opinion.
I think that was
okay.
The same
I just wanted to make sure that
was the same in both drafts, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to confirm that.
Okay. The ayes have it 5-0. Thank you very much. So today is an exciting day at the Federal Election Commission because we are unveiling our new campaign finance disclosure portal. And it's something that many members of the staff have worked on for a long period of time, and we truly appreciate all your hard work. The purpose of the disclosure portal is to put all of the voluminous amount of campaign finance data that the commission has, probably our most valuable asset, in one place that is easier to enter and is a lot more user-friendly for people to take a look at. So Mr. Alec Palmer, our staff director, is going to give us a brief overview of the new portal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is an exciting day here at the Federal Election Commission, and today, as the chair mentioned, we are introducing a new campaign finance disclosure portal. Historically, the FEC has had disclosure portal information in hard-to-find locations on the website, and prior to launching the House and Senate map, which we did a few years ago, it was actually very difficult to be able to navigate and to be able to get to meaningful disclosure information. So today we're taking the ease of use a step further with this disclosure portal, which will be accessible at the FEC homepage. The portal is organized in three major categories. The first one is a graphical representation, which will include maps and charts. And in addition to the current maps that we have on there, the House and Senate map, we're also adding basically the House and Senate independent expenditure maps and also two charts which will provide summaries for the national party committees and political action committees. The second major category is going to be the searchable presentation. You'll be able to search reports and statements, do image searches, electronic file searches, and independent expenditure searches, as well as going into our data catalog. The third category is going to be downloadable data. This is where the hardcore researchers will probably go to the most because they can actually download our entire disclosure data at this location. But also for the novice and the general citizen, they'll be able to also use this area to be able to download information and provide research. So we're actually quite excited, and we look forward to continued feedback so we can improve this user experience. And in conclusion, I would like to thank the FEC staff. We're basically later today. There's actually too many people to thank at this meeting, but later today we'll send out a memo and put all of their names in there that virtually represented every division here at the agency. It was an effort of amazing collaboration and an energetic effort that involved new hardware, new architecture, and new design. And we're quite excited, and it raises basically the visibility of disclosure data to a higher and new plateau. And we're very excited, and thank you, and enjoy.
Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Palmer, but I think we did this all in-house. Isn't that right?
95% of the work was done in-house. So we have very talented staff, both on the business side and the technical side, that collaborated to make this happen.
And not only is that a tribute to our talented staff, but it also is very economical and efficient from the standpoint of how we are stewards of our budget, because it's always less expensive to do it in-house than to contract it out. So congratulations to you and your staff, Mr. Palmer, for that great job.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. And thank you to all the staff members of the FEC who helped make this possible today. Excellent.
I got one more thing I'd like to say, if you don't mind, Madam Chair.
Of course not.
On a point of personal privilege, I just want to note that my home senator, Barbara Mikulski, this week, I believe today, became the longest-serving woman in Congress in history. So congratulations to Senator Mikulski.
Excellent. Congratulations. Mr. Palmer, are there any management and administrative matters to discuss?
And Madam Chair, there are none.
Then their meeting is adjourned. Thank you.